This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
The Victorian AIDS Council Gay Men's Health Centre presents Well, Well, Well on Joy, the show that's all about sex, health and well-being.
Joy. Victorian AIDS Council. And welcome to our new time slot. We're with you 8 through to 9 every Monday evening. My co-host tonight is the wonderful Tex, not unknown to most of you out there. And panelling with us tonight is the lovely James. How are we, guys? What's new in your realm?
I'm having fun and looking forward to a night of information and health.
And flying material. By the seat of your pants.
And flying by the seat of my pants.
Yes.
Indeed. It's lovely to be on air with you, Jack. And it's going to be lovely to have some great guests talking with us tonight about an important topic. And James, it's great to have you panelling. Really sensational.
An important thing I need to mention, actually, a week and a bit ago, Vic Bears, with whom we have a partnership, they held a dinner, a fundraiser for the Positive Living Centre Pantry Service. Now, this is unfunded. We rely upon donations and we get by on the smell of an oily rag with a lot of the things we do at the PLC. So hello to all the Vic Bears guys. You've raised lots of money for the Pantry Service, which keeps people in good order within nutrition. And there was a floor show, three floor shows, great video presentations.
Sounds good.
And it was the return of the lovely Maxie Shield. Have you seen her? The Shield sisters made a... One of the Shield sisters made a comeback.
I think we had a bit of a chat about that on the wood the other night as well.
And it was great to see them.
Yeah. And Jack, we should share with our listener that the Victorian AIDS Council Positive Living Centre is a day centre for people living with HIV.
It is.
Now, are we going to listen to a gorgeous piece of music?
Beautiful by Mariah Carey.
Oh, it sums you up, James.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 and every week we're here on Joy 94.9 bringing you news, views and updates on some very important topics related to sex, health and well-being in our gender, sex and sexually diverse community. And tonight is certainly no exception.
That's right, Tex. And tonight on our show we are talking about the ABC of hepatitis C. What it is, how you get it, what does it mean to live with it and how it may impact upon your lifestyle, particularly if you have another chronic condition, what the research is and what treatments may be available. And tonight we shall be hearing from people from both a personal and a clinical perspective on what Hep C means.
And if you've missed out on the last Well, Well, Well shows, or you just want to hear a show again or share it with your friends, you can always download podcasts of previous episodes at www.joy.org.au. And our thanks go to the wonderful David, who's our Joy podcaster.
So please join in the conversation. You can send us an email onair@joy.org.au, or you can SMS on 0427 JOY 949, and both of those come to us right here in the studio.
And tonight we are talking to Joel, and later in the show to Jen Johnson from La Trobe University. But to begin with, I'd like to welcome you, Joel, to the show. Welcome to Well, Well, Well.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in. And you're going to talk to us about hepatitis C, bringing your own perspective to the discussion. Now, Joel, hepatitis C, can you begin by telling us what it is exactly and why it is important to you?
Hepatitis C is a blood-borne virus that affects the liver primarily. So if left untreated, it can cause damage to the liver, which may result in liver scarring, which then could potentially result in liver cancer. Mm. So it's a pretty important virus to know about.
Definitely. What does being Hep C positive mean to a person in regard to your life generally?
Well, it just means, the practicalities are that I can't drink as much alcohol as a normal person.
But you still can drink some?
I can drink some, but my tolerance is very low. Mm-hmm. I've got to avoid fatty foods, so I have problems digesting them. But, I mean, that's sort of healthy living anyway, isn't it?
Yeah. We should all be avoiding fatty foods.
But it can have it's particularly around the liver damage, so you've just got to be extra careful.
Now, Joel, how would someone know they've got hepatitis C? How did you find out?
I found out from a blood test. So I was just going in for my routine sexual health screening.
Yep.
And a nurse called me and said, oh, you need to come in and discuss some liver results. Mm. And I was sort of like, oh, I don't really know what that means. And I got into the clinic and they sat me down and said, oh, you've got hepatitis C. Mm. Now, that was a complete shock to me because it wasn't at all on my radar. I didn't really know that much about Hep C at the time. What I did know is that there was some risks maybe around sharing injecting equipment.
Yeah.
But because I wasn't doing that at that time, I had no idea how I'd got the Hep C.
So the test is a simple blood test, a pretty standard blood test.
Yeah, standard blood test.
And what treatments are available?
Well, back then, back in 2010 when I first got it, the treatments were pretty horrific. It was sort of a type of chemotherapy which would, when I tried the treatment, it completely wiped me out physically, mentally, for 6 months. And I was supposed to do treatment for 12 months. But people would have seen in the news around the end of last year that the federal government has invested $1 billion into these new treatments. And so we're now in a paradigm where treatments are very, they have little side effects. Mm. Everyone has access to them. And the treatment time has gone from something like a year down to as little as 12 or 8 weeks.
So only 8 weeks. And what was it, tablets?
A
handful of tablets?
No, just one.
Really?
Yeah, just one per day. It's two drugs in one. But they've sort of taken that technology advances from HIV medicine and put that to that
simpler.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great.
You're listening with Jack, Tex, James, and our special guest Joel here on Well, Well, Well on Joy.
Joy. 94.9.
You can access one of the largest podcast portals in community radio, online and in one convenient place. Just head to joy.org.au/podcasts to see our most recently posted episodes. News, sport and entertainment podcasts. When you want them, where you want them, at joy.org/podcasts.
Joy.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy, and you're with yours truly, Jack, Tex and James, and we're talking with Joel about hepatitis C. Before we heard from Christina New, which wasn't quite the song we were all expecting, Joel, you're talking about the medications you take, and it's much easier now. It's down to one tablet. So that's all you've got to worry about.
That's all I have to worry about. I mean, I take them in addition to my HIV meds that I take.
Okay.
So I'm living with both HIV and Hep C. I think is a really important thing to note, particularly because sexual transmission of Hep C is really only concerning for gay men who are living with HIV. If you don't have HIV, then there's much less a risk of sexual transmission of Hep C.
And what about if you're on treatment for Hep C and HIV, what about the contraindications between the two? Is there any sort of problem with that area?
The new Hep C medicines have been in the pipeline for quite some time now, and so I've been working with my specialist since 2010 to ensure that whatever HIV medication regime I'm on is going to be compatible with the Hep C medication. So, and then I also, you know, I take an anti-anxiety tablet on top of that. So, yeah. You know, just a couple of drugs in the morning.
So and not too many at all. Not too bad.
Not at all.
Now, are there any particular side effects from the medicines that you take? I mean, are you still on a medicine for Hep C?
Yeah. I'm just over halfway through a 12-week treatment.
Right.
I haven't really noticed any side effects, which is great.
Mm.
Compared to last time, the old regime, you know, there was significant physical weird symptoms that would come and go, hot and cold flushes, memory loss. There was mental health stuff compounding all of that. To be honest, the treatment used to be worse than I think almost worse than the virus. But that's not the case anymore.
I've heard that.
Now, how does it play out for you in a social or perhaps a professional sense? Does it mean you have to, when you have had side effects, does it mean you have to take time off work? Does it interfere with your social life?
In the past, like when I did the old treatment, I had to take time off work. I couldn't work at the time. But just managing the virus day to day hasn't been that difficult. I mean, as long as I watch what I'm eating, that I don't drink too much, then it's been pretty okay. In terms of disclosing my status, you know, there's been some issues with that in the past, particularly because people make assumptions about how you got Hep C.
Sure.
It's instantly you're the intravenous drug user or, you know, it's somehow that people see hepatitis C as, you know, some sort of virus that people get because they deserve to get it. You've done something wrong. Exactly. But that's not the case. It's not the case.
No.
So sometimes people act out through fear or through not knowing very much about the virus.
Do they try to treat the Hep C first? Is Hep C the focus to knock that out of your system and then they just monitor the HIV medications and that status?
That was the plan first and foremost. Yep. So I didn't go on HIV treatment for 4 years because the specialist wanted me to try and knock the Hep C on the head. Hopefully within the next six weeks,
it will be the case.
Exactly.
You're listening to Well, 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 and you can hear more from Joel about Hep C and HIV after we hear Larger Than Life by the Backstreet Boys.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and we're talking with Joel, and the focus of Well, Well, Well tonight is about hepatitis C. But first of all, before we get back to Joel, we've had a message that has come in. Hi, guys. Thank you, Joel, for discussing this issue. And yes, there is still Hep C and HIV stigma, even in our community.
Everywhere.
That's from Anthony and Naomi in Reservoir. We've also had a message from Harry, who's listening in Reservoir. G'day, Harry. Nice to know you're
Reservoir's
out there.
Reservoir's the place to be, obviously.
It is the place to be, obviously, at the moment.
And what does Harry say?
Oh, he just said hello.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hello.
Okay. Hi. Now that comment brought up stigma around HIV and Hep C. Joel, there are issues around disclosure.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that? And so people make judgments. You've done something wrong. You've been naughty to get it, like the old days of HIV.
Yeah.
So how do you get Hep C to start with?
Yeah. So, look, I think the stigma comes back to people not knowing or, you know, people being scared, particularly because, I mean, with Hep C, there's not a legal requirement to disclose to my sexual partners, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, the way I've managed it is to understand how the virus is transmitted and then manage those risks in relation to sexual play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bloodborne virus, which means it's blood to blood. So you can get that from sharing injecting equipment, from getting a piercing done where there's been a Hep C infected blood, or through tattooing. A lot of it can happen through Southeast Asia if you get tattoos done in Bali where the equipment's not sterile. But this one that's emerged from my experience was this sexual transmission. And it's not just, you know, at first they thought, oh, maybe it's just adventurous play, you know, playing with toys or fisting or group sex. But they've actually found that, you know, it's some quite vanilla guys also got the sexual transmission. So what we know about gay sex is that there could be tiny little microscopic specks of blood, and that just happens as a matter of course during gay sex. But the good thing is that Hep C virus is very weak outside the body. So even though it will last for a long time outside the body, hot soapy water will kill it. So it's about making sure that you clean your toys, you're cleaning your hands, and you know the areas around where you're having sex.
Good information and education is a key ingredient to inform the public. So how do people go about getting more information?
I'm here from the Positive Speakers Bureau.
Yep.
It's a program of Living Positive Victoria, and primarily it's about HIV education, but there are some people like myself living with Hep C. Also, Hepatitis Victoria has their own speakers program called Hep Chat, and so they're speakers that are living with Hep C. And we go into community settings and sort of tell our lived experience to help educate and inform people.
we're talking with Joel. Thank you, Joel. Really great discussion about hepatitis C. You're here with Jack, James, Tex, and our special guest, Joel, here on Well, Well, Well on Joy.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. We're talking about all things to do with hepatitis C with Joel. It's great to have you here, Joel. What message would you have for the listeners who think they may be hep C positive or indeed they're newly diagnosed?
Look, I think the first thing is to ensure that you get tested. It's better to know that you've got it than not to know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say that, you know, treatments are really effective now. There's no reason why you shouldn't be able to access a treatment, and the steps to take to getting that treatment aren't very arduous at all. So, I mean, I think the thing is that there is support out there, there's treatment out there. You know, if you're also living with HIV, Living Positive Victoria is a fantastic resource. The Victorian AIDS Council is an excellent resource. Or Hepatitis Victoria.
Sure.
They've got a fantastic HEP chat line. So they're more than happy to take your questions as well.
And if you wanted to find out where the website for Living Positive Victoria is, or the Victorian AIDS Council, or for Hepatitis Victoria, just go into your favourite search engine, perhaps the one starting with G, and then just type in Victorian AIDS Council, or Living Positive Victoria, or Hepatitis Victoria, and that way you'll get straight to the website. Joel, it's been fantastic having you coming in and talking about your personal details, your personal life of being co-infected with both HIV and Hep C. I'm sure we've all learnt a lot. I know I have. And it's been really great to have the whole topic demystified.
Yes, thanks, Joel.
My pleasure.
Joining us now on Well, 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 via the telephone, I'd like to welcome Jen Johnston. Now, Jen is from La Trobe University, and she's talking to us, but from a different perspective, a clinical and research perspective, about the issues and how that may intersect with the community generally, and particularly for those living with hepatitis C. Jen, welcome.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Tech.
That's
thank
Jack.
You, Jack.
Oh, thank you. All these J's and Joel.
I thought I'd say all of them.
Now, Jen, you're at La Trobe. Now, you're at the Australian Research Centre for Sexual Health and Society.
Health and Society, yeah. Sometimes
what does that mean?
Arches, for short.
What does Arches do?
Arches is a social research centre, and Arches conducts a wide variety of research that relates to HIV and viral hepatitis, as well as sexual health and sexuality. So there's research around LGBT issues, as well as it does a great diversity of work around kind of for everything from sexual health curriculum to, you know, the HIV futures studies thing that Arches does. So a really wide variety of things.
And what's your role exactly?
So I don't work as a researcher. I work in a research into practice role, which is in practice means that the work that I do focuses on building the capacity of the health and community workforce. So community-based organisations that work in HIV and viral hepatitis, as well as more broadly, as well as the health workforce, to better understand HIV and hepatitis C in order to provide better services to communities that are affected by these conditions.
And you're in the bloodborne viruses area?
Yeah, just focusing on HIV and viral hepatitis, so Hep B and Hep C, that's right.
Now, how many different hepatitis viruses are there out there?
Well, it's a bit of an alphabet soup. We've got Hep A, Hep B, Hep C, Hepatitis D, E, and G. So, I mean, I'm not going to talk about all of those. But they're all, it's a little bit confusing because the only thing that they really have in common is that they all affect the liver.
Yep.
But aside from that, they're all very, very different. They really just share the name, which relates to liver. So, you know, Hep A and Hep B, they're vaccine preventable. Whereas Hep C is not. And Hep A is not really such a serious virus. You can get quite sick from it, but it resolves itself generally, whereas Hep B and Hep C, as Joel said earlier, can, if left untreated, can cause liver cirrhosis and liver cancer. So they're the ones that we tend to focus most on. And I guess another key difference is that A and B are classified as STIs, as sexually transmissible infections, but Hep C is a bloodborne virus, and Joel also talked. Thank you, Joel. That was great. And I just really want to acknowledge, you know, his contribution as a voice of someone who's living with Hep C and HIV and the important work that all the speakers do. Oh, you're there.
Yeah, he's still here.
It's hard to know. I'm here in my dressing gown.
We can see you.
I'm dancing, don't you worry.
Okay.
Janet's text here from VAC. Now, is there anything different that you'd say from what Joel has told us about talking us through the transmission of Hep C?
Not anything different. I mean, he's really spot on. I think just to sort of, I don't know if it's worth talking in a bit more detail about how transmission works, because I think that when, you know, your listeners and people generally are trying to understand it, we can sort of have the basic idea that it's transmitted when blood containing the Hep C virus enters into another person's bloodstream, and that, you know, as Joel has said, the most common way that happens certainly in Australia and in worldwide is through unsterile injecting practices. Mm-hmm. But the principle of transmission is basically that there's blood present that contains the virus, but it has to find its way inside another person's bloodstream. And of course, a needle is the most efficient way for that to happen. And that's why tattooing and body piercing are also associated with transmission as well. So that's the kind of straightforward part about hepatitis C, where we say it's only contained in blood, and, you know, so that transmission is when blood containing the virus enters another person's body. But the question that usually arises is actually around sexual transmission, and certainly Joel touched on that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd be interested in talking a little bit more about that, because there can be some confusion around that. So Hep B is only contained in blood, and the transmission has to be able to find its way, the blood has to find its way into another person's bloodstream. So in the context of having sex, I will talk about, you know, because we were talking before about anal sex. Mm-hmm. In the context of anal sex, there would need to be cuts or sores or just any sort of micro abrasions inside the rectum, inside the anus, and yep. That would be the way that the Hep C transmission would occur if there was blood from the other person present. So
sure.
You have to have one person bleeding, and you have to then have the receptive partner having a point of entry into their body. So it's quite uncommon, but having said that, it's much more likely to occur if practices like anal sex or fisting or any practices where blood might be present are occurring. So that's the sort of straightforward part, but there's a bit more to understand about transmission when HIV might also be in the picture.
Sure, we're all ears.
Okay. So, I mean, basically, in the last decade or so, we've seen really a worldwide trend in people with HIV testing positive for hepatitis C, but without any of the risk factors that are usually associated with hepatitis C that I've just described. So there's been a suspicion for some time that this sexual transmission is occurring. And what we've started to learn through the different types of research that are happening is that people who have got HIV are actually at an increased risk of picking up hepatitis C through unprotected anal sex. So I guess I'm specifically talking about men who have sex with men here. And that's because there is an increased susceptibility due to sort of some issues related to the immune system in the way that HIV works, and it can create an additional susceptibility to hepatitis C. And then also that in people with hepatitis C, they're much more likely to be able to pass on that hepatitis C virus sexually. A number of studies have actually started to suggest, and this is where it might get a little bit complicated, that it's possible that hepatitis C virus in the setting of HIV Hep C co-infection can be also found in semen. So this is, I'm just talking about in people with HIV now, so it's really important to be clear about that. We're not talking about generally, we're just talking about when HIV is present. It is possible, some studies are suggesting, but they're not proving it, but they're suggesting it, that semen may play a role in transmission as well as blood. So while we can't say that this is definitive, we really need to be mindful when we're thinking about our prevention practices, as Joel described it, you know, each individual, you know, takes great responsibility in thinking about what they might do differently. It's really important to understand that this might be an additional factor in the transmission of hepatitis C.
Jen, this is a fascinating discussion. We need to listen to a couple of community service announcements and then we'll continue this really interesting conversation. You're here.
Bring some questions on email and text.
Oh, indeed. If you wish to email in questions, it's onair@joy.org.au if you'd like to send in an SMS, 0427-JOY-949. And Jen, as she's just said, is very happy to answer them. You're here on Joy 94.9.
Southeast Men are a part of the LGBTI community and supporters living in the southeastern suburbs. Created for like-minded people to meet socially on regular outings that are fun, casual and comfortable. For more information, please email southeastmen@gmail.com.
Another community message supported by Joy.
You're listening to Well 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 on Joy 94.9 and we are talking with Jen Johnson from Arches. Now, Jen, before the break, we were having a discussion around sexual risk and transmission, and it can be in semen as well, you were saying?
Well, I just think we need to consider that the research is suggesting that that is a possibility.
Yep.
It hasn't been proven, but we just need to keep in mind that there are still things that we don't understand about hepatitis C, and particularly in that setting of co-infection. So we need to just remain, keep our minds open. It's just, it's so important in, you know, the current era. We're talking sort of more broadly around, you know, conversations around, for example, condomless sex among HIV-positive men, for example, and the other sort of prevention techniques and strategies that people might be using around undetectable viral loads, that we need to keep Hep C transmission risk in the picture as well when we're thinking about decision-making about condomless sex in order for it to be as safe as possible. So while we might not be able to definitively say that semen may play a factor, we do know that HCV, Hep C transmissions, are occurring in this context.
So there's a risk.
Now,
Jen, I understand the federal government has committed a sizable chunk of money to some work on hepatitis C. How will this be used, and in which areas will it be? Will it play out?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. The money, and it's a massive amount of money. It's $1 billion.
Yeah, it came out of the blue
over
almost.
Several years. Yes and no.
Sort of.
I mean, it certainly was a surprise, but there has been an extensive advocacy and lobbying campaign happening for as long as we've known that these drugs have been in the pipeline. There's been a campaign that's been really pushing for the drugs to be approved in Australia and then to be listed on the PBS. So the billion-dollar investment that the federal government has made, and congratulations to them for such an incredible decision that affects so many people, and so many people who are actually marginalised from, you know, within our healthcare system. And it's a really brave decision. It's a really good decision. So, I mean, I know there are lots of things that this government has done that haven't been so great for marginalised communities, .. But this is not one of them. So it's really amazing, $1 billion. And the funding is actually going to be going straight up to subsidising these somewhat expensive treatment drugs. So that's where all of the funding is going.
With advances.
Sorry, were you going to say something?
Oh, no, I was going to say, I heard Susan Lee speak recently, and she said that was one of her major achievements. She said this is a controversial move as far as a government is involved, and she said it wasn't without controversy within her own party or cabinet.
Calling
the right shots.
Legacy stuff. I mean, this is a definitive decision that will contribute to eliminating hepatitis C within a generation, if we can do the work that needs to be done in relation to ensuring that the people who have hepatitis C, first of all, know that they have Hep C, so testing, and then are able to access those drugs. The wonderful thing about the decision that's been made, in addition to subsidising these very expensive drugs for every single Australian who's got hepatitis C, over 200,000 Australians, is that they're actually going to be also made available for, they are now available through a GP pathway. So you don't need to go to a specialist, to a hospital specialist, a gastroenterologist or a hepatologist or an infectious diseases doctor to access these drugs. You can access them through your GP. So this is the other thing that's really groundbreaking, because you don't need then to face long waiting lists and, you know, for people living in regional areas, long journeys into these, you know, major clinics and all the rest of it. So it's really fantastic. But there are still a few hoops that people will need to jump through in order to get these drugs. But it's absolutely such great news that they've been subsidised at all, because what we're talking about is the treatment that 95% of people who do this treatment will be cured of Hep C.
So it could be true to say that this is essentially a curable condition now?
Look, it is. I mean, it's never been more optimistic, and I think that it's 95%, so there's always going to be 5%, mm-hmm. you know, on the other side. So, but we can expect that this will get better and better and better. So we can say that, with great optimism, I think we can say that we will be looking at 100% one day. But there are a couple of things that we need to keep in mind. Well, there are, I guess, probably three things that we need to keep in mind. First of all, you can be reinfected with hepatitis C. Okay, so if you get access to these drugs and you are cured from taking these drugs and then you come into contact with Hep C again down the track, you can become Hep C positive again. So at the moment, it seems to be the case that the funding that has been provided by the government for the new treatments, it doesn't exclude people from doing the treatment more than once. Okay, so if someone reacquires Hep C down the track, they'll still be entitled to the treatment. But that could change. Okay, that's something we really need to keep in mind. And the other thing is that, you know, it's really important that people are tested and that they are accessing services around hepatitis C early on in their infection, because the greatest success rates happen when people haven't had hepatitis C for a long time and they haven't had the chance to develop liver cirrhosis and, you know, advanced liver disease. So the sooner people start treatment overall, the greater cure rate we're going to see, because the treatment is less effective if people have significant liver disease. In other words, they've been untreated for a long time. So over time, hopefully, with better systems in place, more people will be able to access treatment sooner, and then we'll see that cure rate go up.
Excellent.
Jen,
it is excellent. It's excellent news.
It's really just wonderful news. It's almost as if there's no, you know, normally, you know, when we say we've got this great news, but these are all the things that we have to consider, there really is no, you know, there's no bad news here. It's not the case that every time someone walks into their GP and says, I want to start Hep C treatment, that they'll walk out with a script that day. Mm. And there's still, you know, Joel touched on issues of kind of stigma and discrimination, and we still live in a world where there might be doctors who say, I don't really deal with that here in my clinic. Or, you know, people might still experience that sort of discrimination at the service level. But more and more, I think, if people are going into the doctors and saying, this is a treatment that is available, it's pretty straightforward. And if there is training that's available for GPs, which is, you know, stuff that's happening behind the scenes as well, that more and more GPs will be skilled up and happy to be a part of eradicating this epidemic.
Now, Jen, the Future survey comes out every few years. What's it telling us, if anything, about hepatitis C, like in regard perhaps to trends, uptakes of treatments, psychological issues, things like that?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically, it tells us a bit, and just it's a really good opportunity to remind people that the next Future study, which is, we're up to Futures 8 now, so Futures is a study of, basically it's a cohort study of the health and well-being of HIV-positive people in Australia. So the next one is recruiting now. And so in the last one, Futures 7, I think some of the key stuff to point out is that around a quarter of the people who participated in the survey had actually never been tested for hepatitis C. So if you sort of start out with that point, it colours the fact that, you know, you might have sort of response rates that say, you know, what have we got here? I've just got it here in front of me. 15.7% of people who participated in the survey said that they had tested positive for hepatitis C, but one quarter hadn't been tested. So the studies have limitations. We know overall that about 11% of people with HIV are co-infected with hepatitis C, and that's piecing together a number of different studies. But I think we need to encourage people as much as possible to be regularly tested for hepatitis C if they've got any risk factors, and we need to keep in mind that stuff around that I talked about in relation to the possibility of hepatitis C being passed on by unprotected anal sex. So annual testing is I think a really good message for people. When people who participated in Futures who did have hepatitis C were asked about how they got it, only 47% said that it was as a result of injecting.
Okay.
27% said that it was a result of sex. So, you know, there really is a lot in there.
Absolutely. Jen, we'll have a few more words from our sponsors. We'll be back with you just in a moment.
Joy 94.9.
You're on Well, Well, Well. This is Joy 94.9. We're talking to Jen Johnson from Arches. Jen.
Hello, hello.
The future seems much brighter in a nutshell than
absolutely.
It did a few years ago.
There really has never been a better time for people to access hepatitis C treatment.
Sure.
And really testing is key. For people who know that they've got hepatitis C, go along to your doctor, or even talking to, you know, going to your HIV STI clinics and finding out where friendly doctors might be if you're concerned about talking to your own doctor about hepatitis C. For people who are concerned that they might have hepatitis C, testing is really simple and straightforward. So there really has never been a better time.
That's great. Jen, is there a fact sheet people could access at your website, for example?
I would really direct people to the Hepatitis Victoria website because, and if people are in other parts of Australia, every state and territory has a hepatitis organisation that will have really, really good information about viral hepatitis and the new treatments.
Jen, thanks very much for your time tonight. We do appreciate your perspective, and we appreciate everything you're doing out there at Arches and at La Trobe.
Oh, thank you so much, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Jen. Bye-bye. The important thing, that was fascinating, wasn't it? Joel? Joel?
Absolutely.
That was interesting.
Was very interesting.
Really, it's excellent. It actually has been an excellent show to have both perspectives, a personal perspective and then someone from a clinical response actually giving a perspective of, well, here is the good news. And, you know, and it is good news. As she said, it's great news.
And for the government to commit, outside of a budget cycle, I must say, $1 billion, which was controversial, but it'll, as she said, it's a defining moment. Joel, I'd like to thank you very much for coming to the studio tonight for your personal perspective.
Anytime.
Now, the important thing is on May the 27th, we've got a special conference coming up, haven't we, Tex?
Oh, yes. Now, look, this is the second Lesbian, Bisexual and Queer Women's Health and Wellbeing Conference. The title of the conference is Connections, Creativity and Care. Now, it's VAC and ACON, that's a New South Wales organisation, are proud to bring you this one-day national conference focusing on the health and well-being of lesbian, bisexual and queer women. The conference will explore best practice and available research in working with LBQ women around mental health, sexual health, alcohol and other drug use, and broader women's health issues. In the event that you'd like to find out more, just go to the VAC website, vac.org.au, and the very first thing that you see that comes up on the screen is a reference to this conference. I'm doing it with my hands in the air, so it should be pretty easy for you to understand, dear listener.
Okay, you're on Well, Well, Well. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, 8 p.m. through to 9.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Whether you're after talk or tunes, it's here all weekend. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.